WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
When it comes to the production of dreams, India has the busiest, noisiest film industry in the world. The travel writer Pico Iyer recently made that observation. The Indian film system is famous for its mass production of movies for the masses. But there's also a recent movement of independent filmmakers. My guest, Ketan Mehta, is one of the directors in this new wave. Mehta describes his films as being about resistance. His film Spices is currently showing in New York and will soon open in 10 other cities. It's about resisting the Subedar, the tax collector, who threatens to demolish an entire village if they don't hand over the already married peasant woman he sexually desires. Mehta's first feature, Bhavni Bhavai, is about the oppression of untouchables in the caste system. Both of these films feature the late Indian actress Smita Patil. A touring retrospective of her films, organized by the Asia Society, is now being shown in New York. Ketan Mehta says that although Americans are just now becoming aware of India's independent films, this movement actually began around 20 years ago.
You see, by the end of the 60s, the Indian cinema had become totally commercial, speculative, and totally regressed into a kind of a caste commercialness. And around that time, a group of filmmakers started making different independent kind of films. And this was defined then by the journalists in the press as the new wave of Indian cinema. Many filmmakers have contributed to this. There's a large group of filmmakers working independently outside the mainstream commercial cinema in India. And they are getting recognition around the world now, towards the end of the 80s.
Where do you see your films fitting in between art films and commercial films in India?
You see, over the time, what also happened was that the so-called independent filmmakers were totally marginalized because of commercial pressures and catering to an urban intelligentsia. But India, cinema in India is such a big, major influence on the mass of the people that it was necessary also to try and break this marginalization, this barrier, and try and reach out to a very large people, which cinema in India allows. And therefore, a few filmmakers started consciously to use the idioms of the popular Indian cinema and folk theater and break through this barrier of not being seen widely and being appropriated by just intelligentsia.
Now, I believe you're making a satire about the Indian film industry.
That's right.
India seems like a country that's really film crazy, perhaps even more so than the United States.
That's true. India produces three times as many films as Hollywood does. It is the largest film producing country in the world. And it is more or less part of the regular diet of the people. And it has not only been a great industry, but it's also somehow totally influenced the psyche of a large section of the population. Films somehow dominate the mind to the extent that films get internalized into your mind, your fantasies start becoming derived from cinema. And it is like a cultural diet which is part of the regular affair. You know?
Do Indian films have certain formulas that you are satirizing in your movie?
Oh yes, I mean, every time a film succeeds, various clones of that kind of film start coming out, as it happens here as well.
Mm-hmm.
But in India, these formulas over the years have become institutionalized, in the sense that three or four formulas with n number of ingredients juggled around and churned out or recycled is what in majority of Indian cinema, commercial cinema, is doing. And these formulas over the years have become stale, they have stultified, they have lost all their vitality with which they initially took over the imagination of the people. So what I feel is that these formulas and these so-called stereotypes have a certain associative value which is generated into the mind of the people. They have a value by which you can trigger associations. But the attempt is to revitalize these these known figures, to give them more life, greater complexity, so that the audience still understands them, the association value is much greater, and you're still communicating a new idea, a new thought.
I'm not familiar with the institutionalized formulas of the Indian cinema. Can you describe one of them?
Oh, yes. One of them is, it's called Lost and Found. It is about brothers lost in childhood. One goes the evil way, the other is a good man. They grew up in different family backgrounds and get together again towards the end of the film to right the wrong, you know.
So good triumphs.
Yes. So it is, I mean, this formula is now called Lost and Found formula in India. And there are at least 50 to 60 films made a year on this particular formula.
What's another example?
Other is called family drama, which is a joint family, the crisis of a joint family going on, where the wife is harassed by the mother-in-law and sister-in-law and the entire constricting joint family background. And how in the end the wife finally sees the value of joint family and how everything ends happily. That's the kind of a formula that works out.
One book I was reading that has a chapter on the Indian cinema says that every hero is plump and every heroine is chunky as a sign of their prosperity. Does that jive with the way you see it?
They don't start that way, though.
Uh-oh.
It is just the signs of prosperity finally taking over.
Uh-huh, okay. My guest is Indian film director Ketan Mehta, and several of his films are being shown now in the Asia Society of New York's film tribute to the late Indian actress Smita Patil, and he's part of the new wave of Indian film directors. There are so many different languages in India and so many different religions. Do you have to be careful when you're making a movie to make it comprehensible to the complete population?
Yeah, one thing about India is that in spite of this diversity of languages and cultures and religions and everything, there is something called a collective cultural consciousness where you are aware, even without having really to learn, about various other cultures as if they are a part of you. And so somewhere we are continuously aware of how the others feel, how they would react. And this is also part of daily living.
Have you worked in different languages?
Yes, I started making films in a language called Gujarati. Now I make films in Hindi. Many actors in India work in various languages. Smita Patil acted in 10 languages, different languages. Deepti Nawal, Shabana Azmi, all these people have actually worked in more than one languages.
Are films dubbed or subtitled for regions in which different languages are spoken?
They are dubbed because the literacy rate in India is not very high, as you know. And so the reading the subtitle just is limited to very few urban centers. And therefore, they are dubbed within the regional languages.
Mm-hmm. What are the movie theaters like in India? Are they much different from in the United States? Is the film viewing experience much different?
The cinema halls in the urban cities are, there's an entire range from very sophisticated high technology cinema halls to ramshackle theaters in small towns and villages where, the Second World War technology still prevails, you know. But what is happening recently now is that the cinema halls in India were usually very large, over 1,000 seater, you know, 1,000, 2,000 seats. And with influx of television and a very large influx of videotapes and video recorders, these huge cinemas are going through a crisis. And because of the real estate escalation, a lot of cinema halls are now breaking down. So I suppose what happened here in terms of breaking up of large theaters into smaller theaters showing various films is now going to happen in India.
Because, that's interesting.
The color television is still very young in India. It started only in 84 or 85. And so that took away a large portion of the regular audience of cinema. And so this Indian cinema also is going through this major flux at this point of time. And I hope out of this flux, some very exciting creative movements emerge.
I want to get back to something we were talking about a minute ago. You were describing some of the formulas that have become institutionalized in the Indian cinema. In your film parody of the Indian cinema, will you be subverting some of these formulas that you've described to us?
That's right.
In what ways?
You see, this formula that it takes off is that of a romantic film where the dream girl comes into mind and then she materializes and then finally you get it. The hero triumphs and gets the girl. Here, the film hero, who is a film buff, film freak, as they call it, who sees every single film that is released, first day, first show, and whose dreams have become cinematic by now. Dreams of this ultimate dream girl, and she materializes in form of a film actress. And from that moment on, he starts chasing his dream. But what happens finally when the dream breaks is that he has to die. And then his death becomes more or less a commodity to be sold in the open market like a dream. He meets a publicity queen who promises him a glorious death if he is willing to die live in front of an audience. And so this entire thing takes, this beautiful dream takes on the quality of a nightmare, which finally explodes into the minds of the audience.
It sounds really interesting. Is the movie completed yet?
Oh, yes.
Has it been shown in India?
Oh, yes.
What kind of reaction did it get there?
Very mixed, because people who, in small towns especially, it went off very, very well, where people identified with this kind of a film buff hero. But in the bigger towns, the criticism was that it was too close to the popular cinema and still too weird.
Huh. There's so many movies made a year in India. Now, from what I understand, a lot of filmmakers and actors are involved simultaneously in several movies. Is that the way it works, that people sign up for several films at a shot?
That's true, especially so in the commercial popular cinema, because nobody has money to really put in at the same time. So the films are shot week at a time, 10 days at a time, and the actors otherwise would have to sit around. So a new kind of a film production framework has come about where it moves according to the dates of the stars.
Well, it must be impossible to coordinate it if your two stars are involved in 15 other movies.
That's true. Uh-huh. But you see, those actors who really want to act in the new kind of cinema or independent films, they somehow try and manage the time to work in these films. And these independent films like The Spices or all my other films are actually shot at a go in 30 or 40 days. So there's this two very distinct, different kind of filmmaking that is emerging from India. Mm-hmm. And some of these stars like Smita Patil or Nasiruddin Shah or Om Puri, Shabana Azmi, Deepti Nawal, all these people who are there in Spices and who have been there in my other films as well, actually make it a point to somehow arrange the dates so that this other kind of cinema also is possible. And they work on very little remuneration. They give all their time and they are really excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this working on two levels which goes on in India simultaneously for most of the stars. Filmmakers somehow still manage to work on one film at a time, especially in the independent filmmakers. But even in the commercial cinema, even the directors are working on 6, 7, 8 films at a time. You know?
In your movies, do you usually dub the dialogue after the film is shot?
Yes, this happens very often because of very noisy conditions under which most of the films are made. And because the films are made over a longer period of time, most of the film which is, most of the shooting that takes place outdoor finally is dubbed in India. Though there is now a tendency towards more and more synchronized shooting.
Would you like to do more synchronized shooting? Mm-hmm. Now, your films have mostly been about resistance in one way or another. Your new film, Spices, well, the film that's showing now in the United States, Spices, it's not your latest film, is about a subedar, a tax collector, who wants to take a beautiful married village woman for his pleasure, and he threatens to destroy the village if she doesn't turn herself over, and then the villagers have to decide whether they're willing to sacrifice their own safety to protect her. This film is set in the past, but do you see this movie as raising contemporary issues?
That's right. Because this film goes beyond a small issue being happening in a small village. It goes beyond and touches the entire humanity, where there are so many things happening all around you to which we have stopped reacting. And so this film is about actually discovering the meaning of freedom. What does freedom mean? Is it freedom not to do anything as well, which is part of the freedom? Is it freedom to do anything you like? Is that freedom? And where the various freedoms collide to create a very oppressive situation. And so it is stance to all that is dehumanizing happening all around us, all the time.
The film is also about the oppression of women, and it has a feminist theme. Is there much of a feminist movement now in India?
Yes, it's a very strong, growing feminist movement.
How is that affected, and how is that affecting the film industry? Do you see feminist themes expressed a lot in the commercial films, or is it only in the independent films?
The feminist theme also gets consumed and appropriated, and used for rhetoric, which is just a consumption device, a device to exploit a new idea.
Mm-hmm. No, one of your earlier films, Bhavni Bhavni, was about the caste system. Would you describe the film a little bit for us?
Yeah, it was based on an old folklore called the garb of the untouchables. In India, we have had a very strong caste system, the symptoms of which still prevail. But in earlier times, it was really a very strong social factor. And the entire society was divided into various castes and formed into a hierarchy where the untouchables were the lowest caste and they were the most oppressed. And the ultimate symbol of this oppression was a peculiar garb that they had to wear, a kind of clothes, the costume that they had to wear. They had to wear a clay spittoon around their necks to spit in and not spit on the earth. They had to tie a broom behind their backs to wipe their footsteps. They had to wear a vest with a hole in the back as a symbol of submission. They had to keep... there was a peculiar kind of a headdress to go with it. And this is a story about how this garb got changed. It is a story about the untouchable suddenly becoming conscious of the state and deciding to do something about it. And how the entire system, the feudal system around at that point of time, resisted this change taking place. And it's a story of how every time this kind of oppression takes place and the system resists the change, people have to get together again to change it somehow.
Now, I understand that as you were making this movie, there were riots going on by untouchables protesting their status.
No, actually, it was the other way around. There were these riots which were started by the upper castes.
Oh.
As a direct repression against some of these legal provisions made in favor of the untouchables. And then it started, the retaliation started, and therefore the entire thing blew up into a caste war going on.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Indian film director Ketan Mehta. In America, there's a rating system to alert potential viewers about the degree of sex or violence in a movie. I'm wondering if there's any rating system or any government standards or censorship that determines the amount of sex or violence that can be shown in a film.
Oh, yes. There is this central board of censorship, which is very strong, and it is monitored very, very strongly. Sometimes... to the disadvantage of the films made. But sex and violence are two things which are censored very heavily in India.
What are the standards? How far can you go?
Oh, people go very far, but not as far as some of the films in Hollywood go.
Are there, you were talking about formulas before, are there standards standard ways of trying to get around the censorship code?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, what are they?
You see, a language, a kind of a dialogue, which is now called in India double meaning. I mean, that has become almost a phrase, where it has a kind of a ribald meaning along with a very decent meaning. And this kind of a dialogue continuously goes on one hand. On the other hand, there are these very definite cabaret scenes or rape sequences, which have become a regular formula for most of the commercial films. So this kind of a subversion takes place all the time. Very violent rape scenes going on, very dehumanizing dance sequences go on. So it is, the titillation takes place in various forms. Instead of a brazen body show, it becomes a kind of a camouflage titillation which takes place.
While you're in the United States, are you going to the movies a lot?
Oh yes, trying to see the spectrum that is offered by the Hollywood here. From Sex, Lies and Videotapes to Batman.
Uh-huh. Well, great. I wish you a good stay in the United States, and I thank you very much for talking with us about movies. Thank you.
Thank you very much.